Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you and Mayor Stephanie Miner here this morning. As most everyone is aware by now, I hope, TMR is celebrating its 50th anniversary this year. Thank you. Congratulations. And I think most of you know also that the Roundtable was the brainchild of Lee Smith and his co-founding fathers, Cliff Winters, who was the dean of University College, John Searles, who was the head of the MDA, the Metropolitan Development Association, and Irving Berman, who was the executive director of the Gifford Foundation. Yeah. So the purpose of the forum was then, as it is now, to bring together a mix of civic leaders to learn about and discuss community issues. So that's what we're all about, right? The roundtable, which was the Thursday breakfast roundtable, by the way, in the early days, began with 9 programs in March and April of 1965. Unfortunately, there are no recordings or transcripts or minutes of those meetings, so we can only guess what those 9 men had to say. On March 4th, 1965, Mayor William Walsh spoke on our major strengths and weaknesses, as seen from City Hall. Today, March 5th, 2015, I've asked Mayor Stephanie Miner to speak on that same topic. Right away, of course, we noticed one difference, right? Mayor Walsh, who was in the first of his 2 terms as mayor, was a Republican. Believe it or not, in those days, both city and suburban governments were usually elected on the Republican ticket. We wouldn't have to look far to see a lot of other differences. Of course, in 1965, the group wouldn't have been able to imagine a woman as mayor, and in fact, TMR would not have allowed any women in the audience, let alone as a speaker. So times have changed, right? It'd be interesting to consider all the changes in city and city government and finances over the last 50 years, but needless to say, I'm not going to do that. But there are a couple of interesting things that I wanted to just point out. In 1965, when Mayor Walsh spoke, the city's population, which had peaked in 1950, was already well on its way to declining as city dwellers, here as elsewhere, as we know, began moving to the suburbs. But we know that here that trend has begun to reverse, and we hope that new trend continues. In the 1960s, the demographics of the city were changing as well, as residents from other parts of the country began to move here. And that was a change from the city's growth in the earlier decades when a lot of the growth had come from immigrants from other countries. But we know that that's now happening too, although the origins of those immigrant and refugee groups are a lot different than the earlier ones. And downtown in the 1960s was experiencing the effects of urban renewal and of the building of Interstate 81. Today, as we know, downtown is experiencing another kind of renewal, and Interstate 81 holds lots of possibilities for the transformation of the city in the future. So, Stephanie A. Miner is the 53rd mayor of the city of Syracuse. Mayor Miner was elected on November 3rd, 2009. She became the first woman elected mayor of any of the big 5 cities in New York State. She was reelected in 2013 to her second and final term as mayor. That is, unless, as happened in 1960, a charter revision eliminates mayoral term limits. I'm not trying to start any rumors. I'm just saying. I'm just saying that's what happened in 1960. Mayor Miner.
Thank you very much. It is really, truly an honor to come before you to be asked to reflect and use as a jumping off point Mayor Walsh's, the topic of his speech at any point. I also want to say that I was very fortunate that I knew Lee Smith. And I say with total and complete and undying affection, he was one of the best characters that I had ever met in my life. And Lee had a great affection for this community, and he had a great affection for ideas and dialogue and discussion, and he also had a very healthy sense of irreverence, which I try to use every day to get through some of the challenges that go along with having my job. So when I was asked to come and speak to you today to use Mayor Walsh's strengths and challenges, I thought I would talk to you about where we find ourselves in the context of cities. And it's really a context that talks about our strengths. It is often said that the 21st century is the century of cities. And while we hear about this often with the cities of Asia and their tremendous growth and populations, the U.S. cities really remain the powerhouse of the world economy. And in fact, in the national context, U.S. large and middleweight cities dominate the economy. Large cities, the ones that we all can name of and think of off the top of our head, Los Angeles, New York City, Chicago, they're expected to generate more than 10% of the gross domestic product growth in the next 10 years. But middleweight cities, and those are the cities that we don't often think about, and middleweight cities are defined as cities in metropolitan statistical areas, you're a very smart group, I know you know that, MSAs, of between 150,000 and 10 million. That's where 70% of the U.S. population lives. That's where Syracuse is squarely in the middle as an MSA. And middleweights are going to generate, and already do, 70% of the gross domestic product. So in the 21st century, we are seeing cities replace suburbs and rural areas. More people live in cities than live in other areas. And why are cities having this exponential growth? As referenced by Sandra, in 2011 was the first time in 90 years that American cities registered higher growth than the suburbs. Cities are in the midst of a great revival, and unlike Mayor Walsh, the tides of suburbanization have shifted, and we are witnessing a remigration to our cities. And as Sandra mentioned, here in Syracuse, we've seen our population growth stabilize, which is fairly unique in upstate New York. And we have seen a revitalized downtown with specialty retail and a residential vacancy rate of close to 0%. We have new projects coming online for housing, and of course, our beloved Hotel Syracuse. And I'm also pleased to say that this week I was part of a jury panel that selected a world-famous landscape architecture group of MELK, that is from New York City but originally from the Netherlands, were the world-famous architect from Britain to design a landscape architecture piece for what is known as Perseverance Park, which is the flow chart, the flowscape that you see right there, which we call our 100% corner, which we were able to recognize and see and capture the attention because we were able to get the bus stop moved. But why is all of this happening? I would like, of course, to tell you it's because of the great leadership of mayors. And that is one part of it. But why is it happening? Because in the 21st century, cities, including Syracuse, have the essential criteria to compete in a global knowledge-based economy. It's creativity, it's problem-solving, and it's innovation. Cities facilitate interactions and the exchange of ideas and collaboration. And the data shows that the more density you get, the more you drive ideas and information and solutions that grow exponentially. And this is what is colloquially now referred to fairly often as the social media effect. And I want to give you an example of what we had happen this week in the social media effect. This is a poster mock-up from the Hunger Games 2 poster that came out. And on Tuesday night, I got an email from somebody saying, "Did you see what is going around?" And they sent me this poster, which, that is my face. I would love to tell you that the rest of it is me. The idealized version, the rest of it is me. This is a poster, a mock-up, that appeared on a Tumblr blog of a fairly well-known political blogger in New York City called Ozzie Piebeck. I don't even know how to say his last name. I can spell it because I've seen it so many times. He put it on his Tumblr blog. I'm not even sure what a Tumblr blog is. and somehow it got to somebody else who put it on Twitter, who then put it on Facebook, and by Thursday morning, it was all over. It's the social media effect, and given the technology that we have, if you are very sophisticated, you can do this kind of thing to highlight the point. And if you can't see it in the back, and those of you on the radio who are listening, the poster says the games have just begun, the Hunger Games Upstate Revitalization Fund, and it has a picture of me in a wetsuit with a very huge, accurate wrench. And I am surrounded by water, which I say only half tongue-in-cheek when the thaw happens this year, and I believe it will happen. When the thaw happens, all of us who deal with the city of Syracuse are concerned that that's what our streets are going to look like. But innovation is the fuel of a modern knowledge economy. And as I said, Syracuse is no different, and we have been rewarded by our innovative approach and by our innovative thinking. Just recently, we were awarded a Bloomberg grant, a grant that will allow us to put together an innovation team. We are one of 14 cities worldwide. We had to compete for this grant, and we were awarded $1.3 million over 3 years to create this Office of Innovation to look at different ways to implement solutions. And of course, the land bank. We have been leading the state as the most active and successful land bank, focused on dealing with the issue of underutilized and vacant property. And in fact, the Attorney General and his team were in town yesterday talking to our land bank about the success that they have had, what some of the still the regulatory issues are, and how we move forward. And Say Yes to Education. It's now in its 7th year providing our students with comprehensive supports, thanks to, of course, many people in this room. Since 2009, more than 2,600 city school district students have graduated and enrolled in college with Say Yes support. The Say Yes Foundation, the others and individual donors have provided more than $4.5 million in direct tuition assistance, and more than 250 Say Yes scholars have graduated from 4-year colleges and universities. In cities, innovation trumps ideology. And my theory, and that mayors across the country will tell you, that's because we can't run away from our problems. We can't say, geez, we don't know how to deal with that, we'll get back to you. When we walk out of our door in the morning, the problems are there, and so the need to have solutions forces us to focus on that. And the lack of a federal policy or a state policy dealing in particular with urban issues also forces us to focus on innovation. We also believe, and I believe, that we have a passion for cities and urban planning, and we look towards policies that look towards the future and a drive to solve problems, not create them. And in the area of problems or challenges or weaknesses, as Mayor Walsh would have said probably in 1965, if you ask me what problems do we have, I would say to you we have all of them. All cities, no matter their size, have the same problems. It's just how big those numbers are. And of course you may say, oh, Mayor, you kid. Well, let's talk about it. I think the preeminent challenge of my generation, of our generation, is climate change. February 15th found the coldest February ever in Syracuse. That's evidence of climate change. Politically, and I think morally, most of us in this country are having a really hard and thoughtful discussion about income inequality. Syracuse is the 23rd poorest city in the United States. That's income inequality. And another crisis that I have been talking about, and actually was mentioned by John Oliver on his very popular show this week tonight, infrastructure. You name the infrastructure problem, we have it. The benefit of having an old city where you get to talk about the reflections of a mayor from 50 years ago and you get the great history that we have is also that we have the infrastructure that is declining. I talk about the Syracuse water infrastructure and the water system because that illustrates the problem, but I could take any infrastructure type and put it in and talk to you about the same issues, the same trend. but let me use this opportunity to talk to you about the Syracuse water system. Our magnificent water system was designed in the late 1800s. The age ranges from 75 years to 120 years old. It is a gravity-based system of 550 miles of pipe. There are only two gravity-based systems in New York State. We are one of them. It has exceptional water quality, which the federal government has found repeatedly, and as a consequence, we do not have a filtration plant. And we have to do a lot to meet a regulatory burden to ensure that we do never have to build a filtration plant. But somewhere, approximately 20 years ago or so, the federal and state government started cutting back dramatically on their water and spending. This is a chart that comes from the comptroller's report called Crumbling Infrastructure that was published a couple of months ago. And what you can see here is that the water and sewer spending has gone down dramatically, 19%, 10%, 35%. While there is a slight bump up in 2009, 2010, that's related to stimulus funding, ERA funding, as it's known. Into that construct, what we've seen is that as that money dried up, municipalities like Syracuse started not having the money to invest or maintain their infrastructure systems. And because in large part these infrastructure systems were very well built, we got away with not doing that kind of maintenance that we've seen. But like any good infrastructure system, it needs to be maintained, it needs to be updated. So in 2004, which is the first year that we as a city started categorizing our water main breaks. From 2004 to 2013, we had 1,718 breaks throughout the city of Syracuse. The black dots are those breaks. In 2014, we had 391 breaks. Those are the red dots that you're going to start to see. The year to date, last night, as I was furiously putting this together, at 6 o'clock, I said, well, how many have we had? We put down 99, and then we got the phone call that we had 100, a gusher on James Street. That was last night. James Street, a major thoroughfare. This year, with 100 breaks already to date, we are on a record pace. We have had frozen pipes like we have never seen before, and because the frost has gone down so far into the ground, because there's been such a cold February, our service lines are freezing. We don't have any record of that ever happening before. And in fact, yesterday I was in and out of the valley because there were frozen service lines throughout the valley. On Saturday, we had 50 families and properties who did not have running water that we were furiously working to try to fix. It costs about $150,000 to replace 350 feet of an 8-inch water main, and that does not include road restoration. Now, when you compare that and with where we are now, you start to see what we mean when we say challenges and our weaknesses. And at this point, I'd like to bring in what Mayor Walsh talked about on March 4th in 1965. There is a newspaper story available in which the mayor, the subheadline is Confidence, citing a multi-million dollar program of construction and expansion was a guarantee of a, quote, robust and dynamic future economy. That sounds just like what I said to you. Amazing how things change and yet they stay the same. But when I read further, was when I really was struck with what the difference is now as opposed to 50 years ago. And this is a quote from the Syracuse paper. It's not a direct quote from him. Mayor Walsh told a group of 50 leaders who attended the initial gathering that larger cities and centers of urban development face a complex of problems which they would not be able to solve if they relied solely on their own resources. He then went on to cite President Johnson, who talked about the importance of local government. And think about it, in 1965, President Johnson had just started the war on poverty. On the state level, Governor Rockefeller had also just started his incredible expansion of the State University of New York program. That's what Mayor Walsh was looking at in terms of partners from the federal and state government. Now I'd like to talk to you about what we are looking at in terms of partners. In the federal government level, there is a profound discussion going on about the basic purpose of government. The Highway Trust Fund is the single largest source of infrastructure funding, and it's going to run out of money on May 31st, 2015. And everyone agrees that there is an infrastructure crisis in this country, and something needs to be done about it. As I said, John Oliver had a story on infrastructure, which I would urge all of you to go to YouTube and watch. But here is what John Oliver put in a part, which he put in his show. Here is the Speaker of the House of Representatives, John Boehner, talking about the Highway Trust Fund.
I'm committed to working to find a funding source so that we can begin to repair America's aging infrastructure. The hunt has been underway for the last year and a half to find that funding source. I wish I could report to you we found it, but we haven't. We've got to find a way to deal with America's crumbling infrastructure, and we need to do it in a long-term program that is, in fact, funded.
So what you see here is Speaker Boehner saying over the period of almost a year and a half that they were committed to finding a solution for the Highway Trust Fund, yet they haven't found a solution for the Highway Trust Fund. As a local government official, it is almost unbelievable to me that somebody could say there is a crisis and yet we don't know how to solve the crisis, or we're not going to do anything to solve the crisis. But that's what's going on in the federal government. When I went last month to Washington to talk about infrastructure and the need for infrastructure funding, while there were certainly Senator Schumer primary among them, people who said to me, we absolutely understand and you're absolutely right, we need to do more. What I was met with over and over again were people who said to me, it's an absolute crisis, but we don't think anything's going to get done. And one person in particular said to me, there's been such a dramatic change in Washington during the Clinton administration, which was not all that long ago. The question was not if we were going to do infrastructure, but how much we were going to do infrastructure. And now the question is if. And these are basic services of government where people depend on every single day. Roads, bridges, dams, you name it. In the state perspective, while it is a little bit different from federal government, while in the federal government there is a profound discussion going on about the purpose of government, in the state government there is a profound action towards positioning yourself, not purpose. And I say that to say to you that over and over again, we have seen people position themselves but not talk about real solutions to problems. The ubiquitous Startup New York ads, I think, kind of illustrate this. This morning as I was having breakfast, there was an ad on. There are ads on every time I turn on the television, which is not that much. I found out by doing a little research, New York State has spent $28 million on Startup New York ads. When the Startup New York campaign was put into place, there was supposed to be a report due that detailed the accounting of which companies received what benefits and what jobs were created. That report went due and due and due. And in December, the agency that was supposed to issue that report actually issued an emergency regulation which allowed them to not issue the report, to delay the report. So in February of this year, at a budget hearing, the governor's representative was there to ask for $50 million additionally to put into a promotional campaign for Startup New York, and there was still no report issued. So when Ken Adams was asked, why hasn't there been a report issued? Ken Adams said, we wanted to paint a complete picture, and to do that, we needed to give companies time to give us all their year-end data. To which then our very own Senator DeFrancisco said, so rather than giving us a complete picture, you gave us no picture. To date, there is no data on whether Startup New York, what it has done, or how many jobs have been created, or which companies have been benefiting. This is a small illustration of what has become a much larger trend. New York State is expected to spend $2.8 billion on economic development in fiscal year 2014. That is a 49% increase in state spending from 2010. The Citizens Budget Commission, which is a very well-respected think tank, has reacted to this in talking about this year's budget, in which they said, over the last 4 years, economic development spending has expanded greatly, but no data has been presented to show what it's doing. They go on to say in this report, the executive budget would continue on this path of excessive economic development spending, despite the paucity of information showing the initiatives yield a worthwhile return. They suggest to the legislators the proposal should be rejected and a moratorium declared on expansions in this area until the benefits of existing programs can be examined carefully and unsuccessful programs terminated. Seems a very reasonable position. Get the data and then determine if the spending is worthwhile. Now, will that happen? I don't know. But I want to talk to you about the kind of position that this focus without data puts mayors like me and cities in. So I'm sure all of you have heard that the governor came into town some time ago and said that Syracuse should fix its own pipes. Show us how you become economically stronger and you create jobs and then you fix your own pipes. Now, let me say a couple of things about this. First, that is completely and totally at odds with New York State history. That is not how we have funded infrastructure in New York State ever. Number two, if this were the case, then why isn't Westchester County residents being asked, or Westchester County businesses, which is one of the most successful, economically successful counties in the United States, being asked to fund the Tappan Zee Bridge? Might be a question that maybe somebody in the media may want to ask. If this were the case, then the second most successful county economically in New York State and in the country, Nassau County and Long Island, why aren't they being asked to fund their own water mains and water works and sewer separation infrastructure projects? They are not. But this is where we now find ourselves. So we are now put in a position where there is hundreds of thousands of dollars being spent on economic development projects in the city of Syracuse, all good projects. And what you see from this map is that, let's start over on the right. The Inner Harbor Lakefront areas had $11.2 million spent of economic development money there. We found a water pipe from the 1800s in the Inner Harbor area. St. Joseph's, Upstate, Krauss Hospital, Syracuse University, SUNY ESF, downtown, all of those circles inside of there are all huge water main breaks. So we are spending millions of dollars on economic development over an infrastructure that is crumbling, and we are being told that when you get your own jobs, you'll fix your own infrastructure. So unlike Mayor Walsh, who looked to and saw a supportive federal government and state government, the mayors in the state of New York are seeing that a federal government doesn't want to do anything, doesn't know what a government should do, and in fact will put Homeland Security in jeopardy because of this issue. And the state wants to position itself like it is doing something on economic development, but then not doing the fundamentals that a government has always done in New York State and will indeed actually lead to sustainable economic development. As I said in the newspaper quote, if a business can't put water in their coffee maker or can't flush their toilets, then what makes anybody think that they're going to stay here or expand here? 10 years of no taxes aside, which, as I said in the beginning, we're not even sure, because the data hasn't been presented, because nobody's really forcefully, other than Senator DeFrancisco at this point, asked for that data. So this is a tremendously difficult position. On the one hand, you have cities being the backbone of the 21st century economy. You have the ideas and all of the trends running in the right direction. And at the same time, you have the other levels of government, which have traditionally been partners, not really willing to partner in what I call an effective and meaningful way. So into this you say, well, what's the solution? Well, the solution is the same one that it always is. The solution is democracy. And by democracy, I mean you, and I mean me, and I mean voicing your opinion and our opinion, and voting and being active. And the refreshing part of that is that I will tell you that everywhere that I go, people believe in their local government officials. And just recently, there was a poll released, a statewide poll, which showed overwhelmingly people believed that their local officials were their best level of government, they got their best service, and they trusted them most explicitly. So I ask all of you to keep this in mind as we go through this process of really what is, I think, a turning point in how we view government. Democracy is the only thing that has ever worked and that will ever work. But democracy requires all of us to voice our opinions, voice our priorities, and to even when the system gets very difficult and cumbersome and perhaps not worthy of the support in our time, that's the time when you have to double down and say, I need to be part of this process. And indeed, our founding fathers, by which I mean our original founding fathers, not just Mayor Walsh, recognized this in Federalist Number 1 when they said, democracy mandates that we, all of us, establish good government through reflection and choice. And I would say to you that the strengths and the challenges that Mayor Walsh and I faced are very similar and yet very distinct, but we would both demand that our citizens, through reflection and choice, demand the most of us and the other levels of government that they participate in. So with that, I'd be happy to take your questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Miner. For those of you who are guests, if you have a question, raise your hand and I will try to make my way to you. And we try to keep the questions brief. Thank you. Would you stand, Peter? Thanks.
Good morning. Thank you for coming. Mayor Miner, a persistent dilemma in our city is what you labeled as income inequality. Over 50% of our children live in poverty. The implications are obvious, or should be obvious. Could you speak to that particular issue? I notice across the country there are communities working on a poverty plan, if you will, and I'm wondering if our city is addressing that in a systematic way.
Well, I will tell you we are addressing it in a systematic way because it underpins every single thing that we do. You can't be the 23rd poorest city in the country and not think about that with every decision that you make. In particular, to education, let me use this as an opportunity to illustrate the trend or the philosophy that I talked about. So in 2006, when Say Yes to Education came to town and Syracuse said choose us, it was all based, the funding of Say Yes to Education was in large part based on the fact that we were going to receive a windfall of money because of the Campaign for Fiscal Equity lawsuit, that the Court of Appeals had said urban schools like Syracuse are going to be entitled to millions and millions of dollars more. We had a plan together to use that money to invest for full supports for Say Yes to Education, which was health supports, mental health supports, physical supports, all of the kind of issues that poverty puts in the way of children and families being able to succeed. We put that plan together. We were very excited. We had a bunch of stakeholders around. We moved forward. Then the market crashed, and the state government said, nope, we're going to take that money away. We have never received that money. then, people come in and rightly say, well, your test scores and you're not doing what you should for the children of your city. And we say, you're right. We think we should be doing more. And we've tried to do more, and we've put together these solutions, and we counted on the state government being a partner. And guess what? They weren't a partner. Now let me put it one step further for you. There's been a discussion about mayoral control and whether the cities should have mayoral control. I got a call this week from a senator who asked me if I was going to testify tomorrow at a mayoral control public hearing. And I said, well, you know, first of all, I didn't get an invite. It's kind of late, number one. But number two, I don't know what mayoral control means for Syracuse. In the 2015 opportunity plan that was put forward at the State of the State, there are two sentences that talk about mayoral control. Is it mayoral control like New York City? Is it mayoral control like Yonkers has? Does it mean that I would have the ability to discuss collective bargaining agreements? Does it mean that I would have the ability to close schools or move schools around? What does it mean? And the person said to me, I don't know what it means. I said, well, how can I testify on something I don't know what I don't know what it means? But those are the kind of, this is the kind of system that we now have. Like, well, Mayor, we just want you to get up and say something. And I say, well, I'm generally in the practice of knowing something before I opine on it. Maybe that's, you know, maybe that's crazy, but that's what I do. So I sent a letter to various leaders asking them to lay out these questions. We'll see if it gets answered.
Thank you. And I know that Professor Knobloch will be here at the end of the month when Ann Rooney, the Deputy County Commissioner for Human Services, will be here. And I think we'll pose that question to her as well, because children in poverty is a countywide as well as a city problem.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You recently spoke before a budget hearing at the of the state legislature regarding the $5+ billion bank settlement. You received strong support from Senators DeFrancisco and Krueger. What I want to know is, what has been the reaction of the local state delegation to this idea? And this was in regard to spending the money for infrastructure repairs.
I have not heard directly from them.
When you talk about the discussion about the role of government, is the focus on changing the folks there, or is it changing the attitude that they have of what state, federal government should be doing to raise resources to address the real problems? And maybe a third thing is just getting legislators, in particular, and I'm working with executives, I guess, to be able to come to common solutions as opposed to just saying, you say black, I say white, and that type of thing.
Well, you know, look, there are lots of examples I can point to you of consensus, of sharing, of moving forward. Clearly, the county executive and I have done that on a whole host of projects. But there is a overall focus on what's the office that you're running for next. And I don't know if that's because if you are at a state position or a federal government position, you have more time to think about that, or more ambitious people go into that. So look, when I go and talk to people in Albany and Washington, that's the first question anybody asks me. What are you running for next? I said, I'm not here to talk to you about that. I'm here to talk to you about my water mains. But it happens so often and with such frequency. And then the discussion is, well, you know, inevitably we'll then turn into raising money, which I think ultimately is really where the problem is, that there is so much money in our system and you need so much money to run for office that the best of us have a hard time not hearing that siren song.
Speaking of running for office, it's been said, we certainly know that there are a lot of races for elected office that go unfilled. And in addition to democracy, that we establish good government through reflection and choice, we need to have that choice. So where do you see...
So what am I running for next?
No, I'm asking, where's the next the next generation of elected leaders coming from? And I mean, are you optimistic? What do you see? What can we do?
What you can do is, if everybody in here found a local leader and said to that person, you should run for office, just one, you should run for office, that would help. I do this a lot. I ask people to run for office a lot. And I can tell you that there has been a change, both positive and negative. The positive change is, when I used to recruit women for office, they used to say to me, geez, I don't know if I can do it. Now they think they can. But the negative change has been, they say, I don't want to put my family through that. I don't want to have the anonymous, misogynistic, racist, hateful, spiteful comments come up in the blogs. If I have a 12-year-old and I run for office and I say I'm going to run for county legislature or city council or whatever, and then my 12-year-old goes in the blogs and sees this stuff, I mean, you know, think to yourself, why would anybody do that? I mean, I've done it, and, you know, there are times when I don't have a 12-year-old, but I have 12-year-olds in my family who have come to me and said things that other people have said to them, and I cringe. So, look, the political marketplace has always been a marketplace of fastballs and hardballs. But I think that the movement away from substance has made that even more intolerable. Because at least when you have substance and you're talking about purpose and you think that you're solving problems and you're helping people, you can sort of deal with some of the chin music, as baseball fans would call it. But when you're just standing up at press conferences because you're told, like, this is going to position you well, you know, you should be for jobs. Well, who's against jobs, by the way? But this will help you because you'll be for jobs. So stand and take, you know, cut a ribbon. And then, you know, and by the way, you have to raise $500,000 to run because somebody else may come in and say these terrible things. You know, people say, I got other ways to make meaningful impact in my community. It's up to all of us to say, no, we need you to get in there. And we've seen, since I've been mayor, I think we've seen a great collection of people get into local government. And I'm very, very pleased with that.
You know, I may have glided over some of the stories about the governor and Syracuse being retired from the news business. I don't get so deep into the weeds anymore. But having said that, it strikes me, you know, we could have written a headline in the newspaper saying, you know, Cuomo to Syracuse, drop dead.
You were not the only one who raised that issue to me. Yeah.
And today I hear you say, well, you know, his idea is that economic development will lift the boats, and so we can then lower the water level in the streets.
I might use that.
So positioning wise, I mean, is there a more positive way to look at this? And or the corollary is, what if we don't get, as you say, the results are not in from these initiatives? What if we don't grow our economy and can't provide the resources, then our city fails? Is that the
and not just and look not just our city? It's Onondaga County and Central New York are dependent on the health of the city. The economic center of Central New York is Syracuse. The cultural center, the social center, is Syracuse. The largest drivers of economic development for the Central New York region are located in Syracuse, and you can even make it more specific and say located on University Hill. So I would say to you that when we're talking about 81 and we're talking about the health or the viability of our largest drivers of economic development, what do we do if they can't get water? But it's not just us. So Oswego right now is in a state of emergency because of their water mains. Kingston has a huge water main issue. Monroe County, which does water for all of Monroe County, including Rochester, has had more water main breaks in January than they have ever had. Part of what you'll see from the comptroller study is that this is not just a problem for Syracuse. This is a problem for New York State. It's a problem for our country. So God forbid, what happens if a dam breaks? We've had that happen historically in the United States. What happens if a bridge fails and people die? Is that what it's going to take for our leaders to then say, okay, let's get to this, and we can cut a ribbon on that? I would say to you that infrastructure has to be dealt with, and it's not going away.
Mayor, the the most visible piece of crumbling infrastructure is probably the raised part of 81. Mm-hmm. Do you have a view that of the major choices that are now out there, which one might be better for the economic and quality of life in the city?
Look, I think, and I've said this before publicly, that an elevated viaduct doesn't make any sense for our community. It cuts off. It's a dead zone. Look at it now. It's a dead zone. And it cuts off the largest engines of economic development, University Hill, from a burgeoning downtown. The entities on University Hill are landlocked. We want them to grow. Those are good jobs, and they help our economy. They are having a very difficult time growing because of 81 right there in the middle. I would also say to you that it has been asked. Peter Park, the Harvard professor, said he's spent a great deal of his professional life looking for an elevated viaduct that is healthy around it. Doesn't exist. They're all dead zones. So I think that the viaduct should come down. But of the other choices, I don't know yet. And I think properly I shouldn't know yet because we're not through the process. I'm going to be talking to Commissioner McDonald today. But I think that this is an engaged process, and it should be, and we should all keep an open mind. I would say to you that I have said also publicly, if we look at this as just a simple challenge from how to get as many cars from point A to point B, then we're going to get a bad solution. If we look at this as how we can use this as an opportunity to ignite economic development, cultural development, social development, we'll get the right idea. But let me also bring it back to the contents of my earlier discussion. Something's going to have to happen to 81. Well, you know where that money would come from? It'd come from the Highway Trust Fund. So if the Highway Trust Fund goes bankrupt on May 31st, what are we going to do? So, again, these are not just theoretical questions about and the impact of this public philosophy about what is the role of government. We're not talking about, that's why I say, you know, what problems do we have and the national problems and the issues that we're all talking about. I can illustrate every single one of them here in the city of Syracuse. Good morning.
I'm excited that you got the money for the innovation team. And out of curiosity, is sidewalks and snow going to be on their agenda? And if not, how is their agenda going to be developed?
We have not set their agenda other than I've said infrastructure first. There's nothing that says that it couldn't be on the agenda. But what we're going to be looking for are intractable problems that we think a fresh set of ideas with a group of people who have a different skill set could help us solve. And that different skill set, often we have great workers in the city of Syracuse, and they kind of do their work and their jobs, and there's not a lot of fat in the city budget. So everybody is working at doing three different jobs at all the time. So they don't have a lot of time to sit and brainstorm. Part of what this team's job is going to be is to talk to them and say, if you had, you know, what was one problem that you wish you could fix? And then to see if we have the resources to fix that. I'll give you an example. This innovation team started in London. And London is very forward on climate change and climate action, and they wanted people to insulate their attics. And they were willing to pay for people to insulate their attics. Nobody took advantage of the program. They couldn't figure it out. They're like, we're willing to pay for it. Why won't anybody take advantage of it? The innovation team came in. They saw the data. They saw nobody was taking advantage of it. They saw that this was that London was, you know, not making the progress that they needed to. And to oversimplify it, this group found out that people didn't want to clean out their attics. So this innovation team said, we're going to say, we'll pay for your insulation, and we will also pay to have your attics cleaned out. People said, great, sign up. And they went from, like, no participation to 100% participation in 3 months. Those kind of things.
Could have told you that. All right.
Mayor Miner, I know it's a difficult proposition to suggest separating control from resources, but has the city looked at a regional solution to some of your water infrastructure issues? I know we have a state-created water authority, which has bailed out, pardon the pun, a number of our smaller suburban systems. We have a history with the county water district, which actually did contribute to the improvement of the city transmission lines. Maybe regional resources could be brought to bear.
Well, look, we've looked at all solutions, and there, the, not to be too blunt about it, but there are no regional resources. You know, it's often also talked about the Environmental Facilities Corporation. Geez, we have all this money. Why don't you go to the Environmental Facilities Corporation? They can take advantage of, you can take advantage of that. The Environmental Facilities Corporation, I like to say, is akin to a credit card. So if you get a credit card, we all, some of us have learned the hard way, the first question you should really ask is, can I afford to pay the bill back? So in 2008, the federal government required the city of Syracuse to make a whole bunch of upgrades on our water system, which we did. We had to borrow about $36 million. We borrowed that from the EFC at a low interest rate. Now, because of that large-scale borrowing, 25% of our debt service on our water fund, 25% of our revenues on our water fund is debt service. On our general fund, it's 7%. We don't have any additional money to pay back. And when you talk, if this were just a question of resources, or it is a question of resources, but if it were a question of scale, you know, we've done it with the airport authority, we did it with purchasing. Nothing is off the table. But I also think it is somewhat of a red herring to say, give it to somebody else. I mean, if the Highway Trust Fund runs out of money, it's not like New York State's going to have money to replace that with. There is not enough money, there's not enough grants for systems the size of Syracuse to be able to upgrade itself. And again, it's not just Syracuse. I just happen to be the most vocal advocate about it, elected advocate about it at this point.
What are you most hopeful about?
You know, I have to tell you that part of, people say to me a lot, you know, oh man, I could never do your job. Boy, I could never do your job. And the part that people don't see is the extraordinary generosity that I get from people every single day because of my job. And I have this real, just this blessing that I get to work among the people that I serve, and I see them every day. And I feel like they feel like I am working for them, that I am their mayor. And that is both a privilege and a responsibility. So what does that mean, right? That's a lot of romance. So last Friday at about 7 o'clock, I finished working out at the Downtown Y. I did not shower. I was walking to the desk, and I put my key on the desk, and the guy behind the desk said to me, "Anybody told you today they loved you?" I said, "No." And he said to me, "I love you, and I tell people every day, I love my mayor. I love my mayor." And I said, "Thank you." So what makes me the most hopeful is the extraordinary people that are make up the people of the city of Syracuse. We are hardy, we are hardworking, we are innovative, and we will find solutions no matter what the obstacle is in our way. I simply posit to you that history has been that we have had partners who have been willing to work with us on these. If we demand that we have partners, then we'll have partners. But if we continue to allow positioning, continue to allow people to be able to say things that are not backed up by data, continue to be able to have people say, yes, it's a crisis, but I don't have a solution. I've been trying to find that solution now for 2 years. While people's lives are at stake, say that's unacceptable.
Sounds like a good place to end. We'll work on it. Thank you, Mayor Stephanie Miner.